Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Phil, there are so many great television shows and movies.
That's right. Thank goodness Resonance Rewind has the team to analyze them on a personal basis.
Arthur, what if I told you I was from another planet?
What the hell are those things?
Attention, people of Earth. I regret to inform you that in order to make way for the new hyperspace express route, your planet has been scheduled for demolition. Have a nice day.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
From the celebrated best-selling novel, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
What is this thing?
It's the guide. It's got everything you need to know to survive in the universe.
Losing your planet isn't the end of the world.
Hey, man! What the hell are you doing here?
Arthur, this is Zaphod Beeblebrox, president of the galaxy.
He shares three of the same mothers as me.
It's the beginning of an adventure unlike anything on Earth.
I've been stranded on a strange planet for a number of years. I have been avoiding you. You look great. You're doing well. You've grown.
Trisha! The fate of the universe is in their hands.
Sorry, what exactly are we doing?
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Don't leave Earth without it.
Ow! Dirk, what? What was that?
Sentient dolphins, paranoid androids, two-headed alien life forms. Clearly, we need a guide to this after a fashion, so let's take it via Resonance Rewind.
It's an important and popular fact that things are not always what they seem. For instance, on the planet Earth, man had always assumed that he was the most intelligent species occupying the planet, instead of the third most intelligent. The second most intelligent creatures were, of course, dolphins, who, curiously enough, had long known of the impending destruction of the planet Earth. They had made many attempts to alert mankind to the danger, but most of their communications were misinterpreted as amusing attempts to punch footballs or whistle for tidbits. So they eventually decided they would leave Earth by their own means. The last ever dolphin message was misinterpreted as a surprisingly sophisticated attempt to do a double backward somersault through a hoop while whistling the Star-Spangled Banner. But in fact, the message was this: so long, and thanks for all the fish.
Despite those nets that you defeat, we thought that most of you
Ulain Kalufid's trilogy, the classic, of course, Where God Went Wrong, some more of God's greatest mistakes, and who is this God person anyway? Just one of many, many, many little numbers that come out of this particular movie version. I think the ninth iteration of Douglas Adams' classic Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. We know Pamela Sue Mann has rated this highly. She loves the book. She loves the movie. Her favourite character is Alan Rickman. Her daughter, Faye, also thought it was fantastic, also loves the book obsessively. For various reasons, they can't join us today. Robin Pierce hates it. Stephen Pierce hates it. I don't know what Jenny Beale's going to make of it. Jenny, what are your thoughts on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the movie?
I hate it. I thought it was absolutely awful. I hated every moment of it. I'll be perfectly honest, it's the kind of film that I actually thought I probably wouldn't like, but I was prepared to. And I thought, well, should I maybe not give this week a skip? And I thought, no, I'll watch it. I'll give it a go, see if I like it. And I just hated it. I thought it was awful. I admit there were one or two quips, you know, moments of humor that
just
that
one or
made
two
me laugh. There was a couple, but no.
Somebody actually chat you up with the line, "Want to see my spaceship?" I mean, surely that's David Beelbrox's classic line. And what's not to love about the Martin Freeman delivery of "Leave this to me, I'm British, I know how to cue."
That's a cue.
Kathy Manso, let's turn to your good self. As I say, the divisions are deep and far in terms of this particular episode of Residents Rewind. Jared has actually said a big thumbs up to the flying dolphins. Technically, they don't really fly. Okay. They just actually leave the Earth on their own way. We've already heard their classic "So Long and Thanks for All the Fish." But despite the fact that Pamela Sue Mann is not a fan of Zooey Deschanel, she still rates the movie highly. Favourite characters with Alan Rickman. Her daughter Faye gives it a full 10 out of 10 from that point of view. But we aren't going to deal with scores at this stage. What about yourself, Kathy? Is this the first time you've encountered this Garth Jennings incarnation of Douglas Adams' Guide to the Galaxy?
No, it is not the first time. I think I saw it back in 2005 with my dad and my brother and sister. I'm pretty sure. I feel confident about that one. But I think that was the only time I've seen it. And then any time else after that was like different snippets when it was on TV, because you watch it more for the one-liners. That's for sure. Like if you're getting, when you know the line's going to come up, you're like, well, I'm going to hang out for a second. at least that's how I feel about it. But I think it's unique in its own way. I think, now that I have to do a review for it, what I was thinking about today was that I think it had the potential to be so much better, but they tried to involve so much at once in such a short period of time. That's why like the one-liners work. They're so great and they're so memorable, but there's a lot of missing points, like from point A to point B, because they're just trying to get through it so quickly to kind of make it to the end. Mm-hmm. That is also the beginning.
The original series, of course, was a six-part radio series, so 6 half-hours. I was around for that original transmission on BBC Radio 4 late at night. And it then was followed up in the 1980s by a 6-part television series, which also echoed the whole thing. And we saw some nice nods in the direction. In fact, the original Marvin the Paranoid Android character we see actually represented in the queuing sequence. And again, if you work in any sort of educational capabilities, I'm sure you can identify with the bad-tempered, bureaucratic, officious and callous operatives who in many ways actually seem to just take a positive delight in that particular routine. Maybe Jenny's possibly spent too much time in terms of that side of things. She's letting her inner Vogon emerge in this. But you're basically arguing, Kathy, that this would have been better, kind of more, I won't say spaced out, although I just have, but actually sort of opened up to have really actually had a slightly longer format. Because they did certainly have the greatest hits of them, including, of course, an appearance by the late Douglas Adams himself.
Well, yeah, I mean, I recognize that, I understand that it was a TV series. And I think So the writing, it reminds me of very similarly to Zombieland, because originally Zombieland was also supposed to be a TV series spread out where they focused on each rule. And that's kind of like how this would have worked out as well if they're focusing on the book, like, you know, just encountering different things that you would encounter in the book or the guide, I should say. But I think if that's already been done, then in this situation, you should focus on not exactly a scene, but just focus on one specific idea, because there is so much of it, you know? And I think if they just went a little bit more into the details and allowed more opportunity for more one-liners, which we already love, like they delivered them well, I think you would kind of have a great, weird meta form of personification. Because like, that's what makes this film so much fun. It's like, everyone's human except the humans. Like, everyone is showing such human characteristics except the humans themselves until like maybe the end, they kind of give a bit more. And even then they decide, no, it's okay, I've accepted this.
Grunthos the flatulence poet, ode to a small lump of green putty I found in my armpit one midsummer morning, is so resonant of some of the essays I've had to mark over the years that it still has a searing aspect in terms of, yes, I managed to actually avoid knowing my leg or arm off, or indeed actually sort of having to suffer the joys of internal hemorrhaging. But I mean, I think what Adam's sort of managed to capture here was something which certainly I found just improves over the years. And I always felt Red Dwarf, in essence, tended to rip off a lot of the original aspects of humour that were brought into Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Jenny, dig a little bit deeper in terms of what you disliked about this, because you know, was it Trillian, played by Zoe Deschanel? Was it Mos Dee as the eponymous Ford prefect? Was it indeed Martin Freeman as the hapless individual that was Arthur Dent? Or was it just a case of you can't cope without a towel being actually to hand?
I think it's that kind of slapstick sci-fi. I mean, we had this before with another program, and I know I said exactly the same thing. Like my sci-fi to be sci-fi, horror or sci-fi. I don't like this kind of slapstick thing really very much. Martin Freeman, he always seems to play the same character in everything that he's in.
Well, even The Hobbit.
He's just this kind of like fumbling kind of guy, and I don't really like Zoe Deschanel, or however you pronounce her name, very much either. The other guy with the blonde hair, stupid crazy character. There's just
Dave
Fogg
Beeblebrox. I mean, surely a precursor and a foreshadowing of the presidency in the United States. Apparently, you can't be president with a whole brain. I mean, that could basically be, you know, a whole range of presidents since this was launched.
But no. No, I mean, as I say, it's just not really my cup of tea. I mean, I admit it was absolutely unique. Quite unique, and it was more or less what I expected. In fact, it was better than I expected it was going to be, but I just found it silly, and I just don't really like that kind of thing. Sorry.
See, part of the appeal for me is the fact that science fiction as a genre is inherently silly, because we talk about those leaps of faith, we talk about this regularly, and we've switched certainly over the last few weeks here from Navalny and the heavy real-life drama of that particular side of things to the insanity of literally hyperspace drives and indeed the essential bizarreness and bizarre nature of life itself, really, including, of course, let's not forget Slarty Bartfast, in so many ways one of my favourite characters, especially for his fjords. And the notion of the crinkly bits on the fjords. And surely Bill Nighy really sort of paved his way for so many classic incarnations just by portraying Slarty Bartfast.
He was the best. I think, for me personally, obviously science fiction is science fiction, and you have to take a big a big deep breath a lot of the time, but I just like my sci-fi to be straight up and not slapstick. I think that's probably what I would say. But that doesn't mean that this wasn't very unique and very clever. I mean, I think very cleverly done. I kind of agree with Kathy. I mean, I just thought I had to actually read. It was too confusing to just sit down and watch, particularly as I don't really know that much. I mean, I know all about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and all the TV series and the radio series, but I don't know that much about it. And, you know, with all these weird names and planets and things, I had to actually keep referencing IMDb to understand what was going on.
Well, I mean, we do have the attempts to find the solution to life, the universe and everything. And indeed, the four books written in the Hitchhiker's trilogy, see what he did there, also kind of address Douglas Adams' views and perspective on this. Kathy, I mean, some of those philosophical questions that I think Pamela is hugely fond of, and likewise her daughter Faye, nine for Pamela, a 10 for Faye. What did you make of the whole thing? Did you think, well, that's British humour? I mean, it's British humour at its most esoteric.
Actually, I thought I think I was so confused because I was like, how is this both British and American at the same time?
That's Disney. That's the magic of Disney.
Just like, so British and American at the same time. Especially the scene at the end with the cakes and the tea and just like the setup of the cottage. I was like, where am I right now? How did we get here? And there's so many Americans in a room. I enjoy it. Like, I did enjoy watching it, but you're taking bits and pieces that you like. I can't say I liked it conclusively altogether. Like, I have no qualms with Zoe Deschanel. I don't hate, I don't love her. I'm pretty neutral on her. I've seen her do well, and I've seen her where she's not very memorable sometimes, and I think that's just like the curse of an actor. I really agree with Jenny. Martin was playing the same role again that I wasn't prepared for. I was like, The Hobbit, he's also on an adventure he was unwilling to go on. So you have these like quirky elements, and you know, I love Sam Rockwell. I mean, if you guys have ever seen Seven Psychopaths, I love Seven Psychopaths. I think it's such a unique film, and I appreciate his character in it. I don't think he's done amazing in everything, but I think when you want a kooky character, he provides that. You know,
he does play two kooky characters technically, because he's got two heads.
Right. That, you know, I didn't like the decapitation. I wasn't into it. I didn't like what they did with the head. I didn't like how the head was rotated. Could have gone, I don't know why I had such strong feelings about this, but I really took that in. And I guess overall with this film, there are many parts that I love that I'll quote from that. And I won't reveal just yet who my favorite character is, because they themselves, or it themselves, is unique, depending on how you would like to describe it.
The infinite probability drive can indeed end up with two people being metamorphosed into sofas until normality after a fashion is restored. And Jenny, how could you possibly have qualms about a movie which, as opposed to Valentine Dial, who was actually the voice of Deep Thought in the movie, in the TV series and the original radio play, is replaced by Helen Mirren. Helen Mirren as the voice of the Almighty, you know, giving the answer 42.
I'm not a big Helen Mirren fan, if I'm honest. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, I've nothing against her, but I'm not a particularly massive fan. I know she's been in lots of things, but I'm not sure I've seen her in anything.
Doesn't bode well for when we actually review The Queen with respect to Residence Rewind, but there we are.
I might have that week off.
Yeah, I figured you might have contacted her or called her in Prime Suspect, or even her other sort of routines that she's had. But anyway,
my dad watches Prime Suspect, and I've watched it, and I'm not taken.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay. let's progress a little bit more then, because as we said, Kathy, Adams was very much connected with most of the iterations of Hitchhiker's Guide. And it is the same story kind of retold in lots of ways. As I say, he started off writing for radio. He was script editor for Doctor Who for a time. We can certainly see a lot of parallels in terms of the craziness that we get within that whole field. Do you feel as though at any stage the narrative jumped the shark, or was the whole thing jumping the shark, given that, of course, it was Touchstone Pictures, who at the time were Walt Disney's official adult production arm? They were the people who basically Disney used to use, or indeed that was the part of the Disney company that was looking at a more mature approach to life and so on.
Look, there was a flow. I don't want to completely diminish it completely. You know, it started with focus. We knew who our main character was. We knew who our side character is going to be. It was quite exciting and captivating. The Earth is ending in 2 minutes. Drink these pints. So you're just kind of like, okay, I'm on this journey. Like, we're getting in there. Ridiculous, yes, but I understood why they were being ridiculous, because they're, you know, smaller picture, bigger picture, the concept of like, we're going to demolish this house for a bypass. And then that was the same thing happening to the Earth. We're going to demolish this planet for a bypass by someone who signed off on it, not realizing what they signed off on, because there's millions and billions of other planets. So why should this one matter? And you had like the philosophical themes that were always coming through, which I do enjoy it for that reason, the poking fun at the philosophical themes, right? Because these are things that, you know, people before us, people now, and people after us will continue to think of, and we will all derive our own conclusions, or maybe never have a conclusion for. So I think that concept to be considered, I mean, that's the fun thing about sci-fi. They make it so meta, metafiction, really, when it comes to things like that, which really relates to, you know, current life, which I do enjoy when it comes to science fiction, to make you think a little bit deeper. But, you know, your thinking really gets disrupted when there's just, you're jumping from so many different incidents happening at once. You know, the minute the characters get separated, they don't really explain the storylines as they're both going on. You just kind of accept information from one, from a sentence. Like, I guess I will give a slight spoiler to the end. But I mean, you know, this film came out in 2005, get with it. I think if it's at the end, you have this whole thing where he's taken and he's explained about this is Earth 2.0. And you know about everything that just happened with the team, where they're like sad and they had the perspective gun hit them and they're having all these very big moments. And you don't know how they got back together, because they just appear all of a sudden in this 2.0 Earth cottage and they're kind of sleepy, mopey, and nothing has been explained except like, well, we were captured and then we were treated really nicely. And it's like, I think that really was a harsh way to transition. Like, it completely took me out of the story. And there are other moments that are similar to that, because it's like they just didn't have a flow with the two storylines that were occurring, which is, it's okay to have multiple storylines in a film. It's what makes it interesting and captivating. But I think it takes quite a skill to blend them together.
Gareth Jennings, of course, was directing. And I think in terms of the philosophy, what's not to appreciate about the great green Arkel seizure, in which, of course, the notion of all awaiting the coming of the great white handkerchief could actually be significant. Certainly the portrayal by John Malkovich, another Hollywood legend, as Huma Kavula. And I think so lovely special effects, I thought, in terms of the way in which Huma Kavula was actually wandering along in little sort of feet, etc. Also have to say, hats off as well, an honorable mention to the little crabs, especially the little crab who hopped along with joy to actually greet the visitors to its planet, but was then crushed by the thing as it came down. And how often have we been coming up with an idea, certainly in terms of education, where you suddenly actually whacked in the face with a spade for even daring to think of an idea? You know, those are sort of, you know, problematic issues at the best of times, really. So, Jenny, what about characters? Let's move into that now. I mean, we've cited a few of the folk who are actually there. I mean, clearly Marvin, who was actually portrayed by Warwick Davis, but with the voice of course, Alan Rickman, the late great Alan Rickman on there. Kelly MacDonald puts in a lovely cameo appearance as the reporter from that side of things. We mentioned John Malkovich. Ian McNeice, of course, as the voice of Qualtz, etc. Bill Nighy as Slarty Bartfast. Or would you even go for the joys of... I think Sarah Chamberlain, who actually sort of plays the vice president who heads off. Anna Chancellor, I should say, not Sarah Chamberlain. Anna Chancellor, who plays Questula Rontok in her pursuit of, obviously, the president after he, in the form of our wonderful Zaphod Beeblebrox, has stolen the Heart of Gold starship. I mean, there's so many narratives there not to enjoy, surely, or enjoy.
Do you know, there's not, to me, there was no... And I was thinking about this before. I was thinking there is no real characters that stand out to me. I love Bill Nighy, and I actually liked the way that he played this kind of groveling role, which was a little bit different for him. And I love Alan Rickman, and I love his voice. But the idea of a robot that had depression or whatever is wrong with it was just something that I just couldn't really get to grips with. And I felt, well, actually, that it was overdone. It was just like everything was doom and gloom, and it was never really like I wanted to see a bit more manic depressive, where there was a little bit more mood swings or something like that. So I think I would, from that aspect, as much as I love Alan Rickman, I didn't really like the character. I'd probably go for Bill Nighy. Can I just say that the scene where they were all sitting down at the table, it just made me think of Alice in Wonderland when he came in, and I was thinking, oh, it's just like Alice in Wonderland, you know, with the Mad Hatter's tea party. And I thought, yeah, it's kind of like Alice in Wonderland, because that's a little bit crazy, you know. The vibe of the movie then suddenly made me feel like Alice in Wonderland, where it's all kind of like really everything's really peculiar.
Especially when you have the Magrathaeans' gigantic egos, gigantic sort of wisdom, etc., but only appearing in our particular dimension as white mice, clearly actually sort of work our way through that, and the running notion of those two white mice who were...
I have to say that by a mile, my favourite bit was where the robot had the gun and he shot them all, and they all were like, oh, I'm so depressed. Oh, I can't go on. And they all laid out. Even though with everyone else, it only seemed to last like 20 seconds. For them, it seemed to last forever. But yes, that was the best bit, definitely. Anyway,
and when Marvin, actually has GPP, genuine people personalities, what's not to appreciate about that? And of course, the sighing doors. I mean, how often I would like to see, I mean, that's one of the things that haven't come through. But when you go through automatically, you'll say, you know, to me, these are magical.
The doors in Star Trek almost sigh, don't they?
They do, exactly. But that's more. Exactly. Anyway, what about favourite characters for Kathy? I mean, we haven't, of course, mentioned some of the other. I mean, there are so many to actually work through in terms of small cameo roles and so on. But take us through your thinking on this one.
Yeah, this was an easy call for me. I knew the minute it happened, but I was like, yeah, this is the one. So I think the person who did the voice was Bill Bailey, the whale, as it's having its self-realization, where it's like, oh, what's happening? Excuse me, who am I? Hello, why am I here? What's my purpose in life? What do I mean by who am I? Calm down, get a grip now. Like that whole monologue of the whale just falling up to the earth broke me. That and I didn't remember it being so entertaining, but it's like it has self-realization all of a sudden, and it's like we were able to document this, so here you go. And then right after is like, and this is what the Petunias thought.
Oh no, not again.
Not again. which I know is a nod to the I think the BBC series, because they discussed the Petunias in that as well, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
but I thought that was like...
As I say, it started off as a radio play, it then became a novel, it then became a stage play, it then became a TV series, and finally a film. So it had lots of iterations of the sequence, and clearly, as I say, that's part and parcel of the whole sequence. They haven't, I don't think they're quite in the Adams verse managed to tie in, although there have been attempts to link up with Dirk Gently's holistic detective agency. But that again was another aspect. And of course, as Jenny, I'm sure, is well aware, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was based on the meanderings of Douglas Adams when he was actually touring Europe, and he found himself staring up at the stars and wondered if there would be an equivalent to a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy as opposed to a Hitchhiker's Guide around Europe. Clearly, you need to have your towel in place there. Heaven only knows what's the view going to be of Jenny Bill when, in a fortnight's time, we're actually on Galaxy Quest. It could be a particularly experience, interesting, especially as we have Alan Rickman also there by Grandpa's hammer. But that's another issue, and don't worry, Jenny.
I like Galaxy Quest. It's okay.
Oh, you don't want to preempt the whole thing. Remember, you could always connect on the whole system there. So let's talk scores then. Jenny, what are you going to actually provide for this this number? As the president say, we've so far got Pamela Suman on a 9, Faye, who apparently finds it the best thing ever, at a 10, or perhaps almost one of the best things ever. What are you going to go for?
Well, actually, I was considering whether I was going to give it any points at all. Mm. I think I'll just give it 1 for the positive points that I've already mentioned earlier on.
Yeah. Even though we've actually managed to arrange this through much pre-planning and traveling through wormholes back and forth as episode 141 of the Residence Rewind series. So you're kind of almost, 42 is there, but not quite. So we haven't quite got to that stage yet. So Kathy, I also have to give a little plug for the music, which I think was neatly put together. And I mean, the dolphin scenario, I think, is superb. If we add to the So Long and Thanks for All the Fish, the little smidgen of Perry Como. I mean, a movie that's got Perry Como singing magic moments in surely deserves to have some true sort of wonderment.
Yes, 1 point.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's one of the best opening scenes to a film without understanding what you're really in for, you know? So, I really didn't know how I was going to score this because, you know, part of me was fearful that I was going to give it a high score because of nostalgia. So I want to take it at face value how I watched it yesterday and / today. So I think I'm taking away a point or 2 points really for the lack of consistency, but I do recognize that I was impressed for it to be from 2005 and like the technology just seemed very cool and very vivid. And even the
Babelfish,
exactly.
You know, translating a whole range of things there by simply actually sticking it in your ear.
Well, and I liked anything that involved whenever they would refer back to the guide, you know, when they had to explain something and provide an example, like that is very entertaining to me.
Stephen Fry as the voice of the book,
exactly.
Was again important.
Yeah, important. And I wish I had more Stephen Fry, if I'm going to be honest. I think we forget about him a little bit. and that's exactly it. I think I expect more from, there was just so much potential and it didn't reach what it gave. I feel like giving a 9 means like, oh, room for improvement, but like it I don't think it deserves a 9 from what I watched from yesterday and today. But I don't want to be, but I did enjoy myself, and I did enjoy a lot of the writing and the visuals, and for the most part I did have fun watching it. So I'm gonna give it an 8.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly, I find it a very refreshing movie to actually come back to. And maybe it's just because of one's day-by-day occupation that you suddenly start realizing just how close some of our experiences are with respect to dealing with Vogons and sometimes the helplessness of having to lie in front of a bulldozer whilst it's attempting to bulldoze everything that you've actually put together right in front of your eyes. So I think there are messages there. Yeah, you know of what I speak. So we'll find out, I think, hopefully what Natasha Wanton makes of this as well, because I know she's got a few things to say from Australia, so we may actually sort of pick that up very shortly. But overall, I'm going to go 8.5, I think, as far as this is actually concerned, because, it's not a perfect 10. But equally, I think that there are sufficient fun aspects to it that means you're left with a feel-good approach when you sort of come out of the whole thing. Plus, Bill Nighy is slarty Bartfast. I mean, what's not to appreciate in terms of that? And again, if you contrast it with the original TV series, there were some, again, additional things they could have put in there. The restaurant at the end of the universe would have been nice, in which the dishes prefer to actually be eaten and actually say, "You must eat me, try my leg, sir," and so on, which I think has got a whole range of other factors. But there were some really nice bits. Design of Marvin the Paranoid Android, somehow I felt this was less effective than in the original series and the TV thing, but so it goes. So there we are. That kind of concludes our view of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the movie, 2005, written by Douglas Adams, of course, and directed by Garth Jennings, and produced by the team from Touchstone Pictures. Next week, Jenny will be delighted to know that we're back to serious science fiction with a vengeance, because the lead character is effectively being framed for being a child molester. And that's one way of actually kicking off into a whole new world. It's the Terry Nation universe, in which we have the Liberator introduced possibly in this episode, but certainly we have the excitement of Rog Blake, rebellion person, coordinator, and indeed leading to the onset of Blake's Seven, or Terry Nation's Blake Seven, to be precise. So episode one of that will be coming up as far as Resonance Rewind is concerned. So to Jenny Bill, to Kathy Manso. Well, there's always the possibility for pre-record if you wish. This has been used in the past successfully. We have the technology. We have the times to work through that. But for now, to Kathy Manso, to Jenny Bill, and thanks also to their written contributions at Pamela Suman and Faye actually provided. Jared, difficult to actually know where he was coming from in terms of he liked the flying dolphins. So I'm just leaving it there, basically, Jared. So, I mean, I didn't get a score or anything else. I just got a sort of I like the flying dolphins. So that's basically it. Anyway, let's wrap up with a little bit more music, including Perry Como's Magic Moments and Neil Gannon from indeed Divine Comedy, giving his version of So Long and Thank the Fish. And thanks for all the fish. But we'll say, keep on resonating.
Magic moments when two hearts are kept. Magic moments, memories we've been sharing. I'll never forget the moment we kissed the night of the hayride, the way that we hugged to try to keep warm while taking the sleigh ride. Magic moments, memories we've been sharing. Magic moments when two hearts are caring. Time can't erase the memory of these magic telephone call that tied up the line for hours and hours. The Saturday dance, I got up the nerve to send you some flowers. Magic moments, memories we've been sharing. Magic moments when two hearts are caring. Time can't erase the memory of these magic moments filled with love.
The way that we cheered whenever our team was scoring a touchdown.
The time that the floor fell out of my car when I put the clutch down.
the penny arcade, the games that we played, the fun and the prizes.
The Halloween hop, when everyone came in funny disguises.
Magic moments filled with love.
Okay, we've found out what the team think of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and it's fair to say it's polarized, folk. Certainly you've got Jenny Bill on one side, and then, of course, you've got the perspectives of Kathy Manso on the other. And somewhere, of course, on the hyper-fantastic, you've clearly got Pamela Sue Mann and her daughter Faye. So all interesting from that point of view. I've already made my feelings clear on this. I think it merits an 8.5. I might even, in the course of this programme, have gone up to a 9, because it's a fun movie which certainly basically reflects our craziness in our modern world. But what, I hear you ask, what would our Australian correspondent, who has yet to actually appear on Resonance Rewind, make of the whole thing? Well, through the magic of editing and time zone, and indeed taking pan-galactic gargle blasters before we could actually start this particular programme off, Natasha Wanton can join us. How are you, Natasha?
I'm very good, thank you, Alex. I'm happy to be on Renaissance Rewind for a change. This is very lovely.
Yeah. Or even Resonance Rewind. Either way, Renaissance Rewind is another one that we can go through. So let's just keep it going on that basis. For the benefit of the siren listener, are they changed the name again? No, don't worry. It's all there. Partly because it resonates. But Renaissance Rewind could be a very good aspect for that point of view. Okay, let's find out then. What did you make of this 2005 Garth Jennings incarnation of obviously an original radio play that then became a novel, that then became a TV series, that then became a play again, that then became a movie, and so on?
So I'll start by opening this by saying I've only ever seen the movie. So fans of the book, fans of the play and the radio series, please do bear with me. I apologize. I don't want to offend anybody. Personally, I really love this movie. It's that sort of random, fun kind of... I feel like it's very relevant still, you know, almost 18 years later. It's still a movie that very much holds up in terms of its visuals as well as its plot, which is quite a rarity if you think about some of the movies that were made in the early noughties and how the visual effects have just absolutely tanked. I did rewatch it again the other night, and yeah, I think what's so good about this movie, aside from the pop culture references, which I love, I think it's just the craftsmanship of the acting, which is so good. I mean, you've got Alan Rickman, you've got Bill Nighy, you've got Martin Freeman, you've got some really good actors in there, and they know what they're doing, and they know they're in for a good time. And because you can tell they're having a good time, you sort of have a good time as well. I love the sort of the sort of imaginings of the other worlds. I think that's really nicely done. The quirks of it, it sort of doesn't take itself too seriously, like Star Wars. It's a sci-fi movie, I feel like, that's much more accessible than a lot of the sci-fi genre. And it's one that you can kind of use as a segue if you're wanting to get in. But the relatability of Arthur Dent and how he just sort of goes through this journey. He's a bit miserable. He just wants his cup of tea. He just wants to stay in his house and chill out. And it just the journey that he goes through to then like, oh yeah, let's just hop to another planet. It's beautiful. And you go on the journey with him and you relate to him so much. I even love the Vogans. Like you can't even hate the Vogans because they're just so bureaucratic and so well done.
Seem to have actually taken up occupations as administrators in higher educational institutions in the UK, it would seem.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. I think everyone's had to deal with a Vogan at some point in their lives, be it on whatever phone you've had to press 5, 2, and 6 to get through to. No, I think it's a very clever movie. I know there are a number of people who are, as they say, fans of the book and fans of the original, who aren't as keen on this movie. It's been quite polarizing. I know that. But perhaps coming into it, having just seen the film, I would definitely agree 8.5. I really do like this movie. It makes me laugh. I don't laugh out loud a lot at cinema. It's... It's one of those ones where I've really got to be, yeah, it's really got to catch me off guard, which this movie does. There's almost sort of a, I'm trying to think of the name of the director. It kind of reminds me of a little bit. Just bear with me a second while I pluck the name out of the...
Garth Jennings is the director of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
He's the... Yeah, the, he reminds me a little bit of who's the Mel Brooks. It's a little bit Mel Brooksy. I think I really love Mel Brooks's work, and I think that's why it sort of speaks to me a little bit as well. I love that kind of the, not the slapstick. There's a bit of slapstick in there, and I kind of appreciate, but it's
when you have an idea.
Exactly. No, I think it's a really great movie.
Interesting.
I'd be interesting to hear everyone else's opinions, because obviously I'm at this time of the recording.
You're joining us through a different time portal. That's okay. We'll work our way through that. You can listen back to the early part of the production. I personally always keep my towel at hand, because without this, you know, you would never be, you know, where you were in terms of the statement and such like. So let's talk about characters then. And so far we have had thumbs up. I mean, personally, I would certainly say Slarty Bartfast wins it for me. Bill Nye on top four. There, particularly with respect to the crinkly bits about around Norway, although the whale was Kathy Manso's choice in terms of the existential crisis that the whale goes through, as contrasted with the petunia when having been originating as a missile, then subjected to the infinite probability drive, becomes a bowl of petunias and simply says, oh no, not again. But you may go for Yaslin Bey or Mostef's incarnation of Ford Prefect, Sam Rockwell.
I love Marvin. Marvin, it's Alan Rickman. It's a clinically depressed robot. I mean, what can go wrong? He's brilliant. He knew exactly what he was doing when he did the voicing.
I think in tribute to that, and though it doesn't actually feature in the movie, although the original robot as featured in the TV series does feature in the movie in the queuing line that our lead characters, certainly Arthur and friends, are actually waiting for to actually queue up. We see a wonderful incarnation of the original TV version of Marvin, the paranoid android. And we're going to actually have a listen to his chart-topping hit, actually, from the mid-1970s, of Marvin the Paranoid Android. So we'll put that in especially now to wrap up the whole sequence. Well, we've already said this once on the show, but we'll keep it going in any case from that point of view, having secured Natasha. You've gone for an 8.5 in the end for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the 2005 edition.
Definitely. I don't think I could go any lower. It's just genius. I love it.
Exactly. Well, as I say, I'm almost tempted to actually nudge it up to a 9 because, again, I think it improves with repeated viewing. Possibly when I first saw it, it might have been in the sort of 7 or 8 thing. But, you know, we'll see what happens. And again, a heads up that in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be featuring Alan Rickman again on Resonance Rewind, this time in his incarnation of the movie Galaxy Quest, which is another intriguing aspect we'll be chasing up. But Natasha, thank you for joining us. Certainly to Natasha Wandon and the aforementioned team that we've already mentioned. Keep on resonating. And here's Marvin.
I'm just a robot and I know my place. A metal servant to the human race. I work my cat off trying to satisfy. I know they'll disconnect me by and by. Chip on my shoulder made of silicon. Circuits like a lexicon. 10 billion logic functions, maybe more. They make me pick the paper off the floor. Me mad. They clean me with a Brillo pad. A car wash wouldn't be so bad. Life, don't talk to me about life.
so depressed I could expectorate. My moving parts are in a solid state. I want to rust in peace, switch off and lie in that great junkyard in the sky. Solitary, solenoid, terminally paranoid, Marvin. Nothing left to be enjoyed, every diode, rheumatoid, Marvin. Outer alloy, inner void, Marvin. Happiness has been destroyed.
Fish.